The following presentation from the Utah Open Source Conference, held August 28th through the 30th, 2008, is underwritten by CentralPoint, providing the ultimate open source server solution that makes IT simple, manageable, and affordable. www.centralpoint.net. Streaming and podcast hosting bandwidth for this and many other presentations at podcast.utos.org has been provided by Tier 4. The presentation was given by Benjamin Payne on the future of artificial intelligence in open source.
Welcome you all to the Open Source Conference. Today, Ben Payne will be doing your presentation. Guru Labs is sponsoring this room. Please check out their website, gurulabs.com. Thank you.
Thanks. Sorry. Let's see if I can get this thing going again. Cool. It's always great when things work. just a little bit about myself. I guess we could start at the start. My dad was into computers. I kind of went into the family business, I guess you could say. He got me started when I was 9 years old. I wanted a computer to play video games on. Video games at the time, you know, the little 8-bit little graphics. Anyway, I wanted a computer, and he's like, sure, there's one in the basement. Go ahead and take it. You know, it's yours. And I went down there. There was nothing down there but parts everywhere. And I was like, there's nothing down here. There's no computer. He's like, yeah, put it together. It's like a puzzle. And so, you know, I broke a few parts here and there, but I eventually did get it together. And that led me swiftly, I'd say, into programming, where I used to write those old text-based multi-user dungeon games, you know, the MUDs. They were, like, way popular back then. I enjoyed doing that, and kind of just catapulted me into programming. And since then, I've kind of just been trying to be around computers as much as I could. When I was 17, I was a lead IT guy for an engineering company in Heber City, called Epic Engineering, and they did just civil engineering, basically. And that was really interesting, difficult, I think, because I had engineers that were asking me to come fix their computers when I was just a kid. So I did that. Shortly after that, I began working at a company here. I don't know if you've seen it. It's down in Sandy. It's called Cadence Design Systems. And for them, I was doing grid computing. And we wrote software that controlled the, it was like meta software for the grids for server farms. We were automating build processes. And it was really cool because, you know, we were able to take huge build processes and that would sometimes last days, and we could get them down to 10 minutes. So I really enjoyed that. And I started school at Utah Valley State College, where I'm still at for a couple of semesters, and then I'll be done. So that's pretty much me. And now for what you really came for. First of all, the topic that I decided to discuss was the future of open source or of artificial intelligence in open source. I'm going to kind of intermingle that with my presentation here. The presentation itself doesn't cover a lot of that, and it's mostly about how to do AI, but I think that there are a lot of applications that could be used, that this specific stuff can be used for. as you can see, I've said that there are different types of artificial intelligence. That is important to mention because a lot of people play video games or other things where they hear of the term artificial intelligence. That's kind of different than what is actually academic artificial intelligence or the research artificial intelligence, where the mathematics hit the road, you know what I mean? It's different in a lot of ways, and I'm going to show kind of how both of those work, or that's my intent. So let's go ahead with that. With my mouse. There are a lot of different areas that artificial intelligence is being used in. Like I said, games is one, but that's a little bit different than what we're going to be talking about. They're working on things like learning medical records and for instance, just imagine if your house could do statistical analysis on your energy use and just save you a lot of money on power and gas and things like that. So, I mean, that would be super awesome. Also, they're using the artificial intelligence to see how people use an application or online. Like, what are you interested in? You know, you can just it can look at what you keep browsing for, and it can send you advertisements based on that. Try and get you to buy stuff, I guess. Unfortunately, the field of artificial intelligence hasn't progressed quite like they planned it to do. When it first started, it was just kind of this awesome field that people were like, we could do anything with this. We could just use this thing and skyrocket, and we're going to make computers behave like humans. You know, and that's still, I guess, the overall goal, but it's not progressed as people would have imagined. But there are a few places that it's done very well in, like, as you can see, speech and handwriting recognition. Both of those can be used or can be done with a neural network, which is what I'm going to discuss a little bit later. Also, data mining is a good field that artificial intelligence has been really successful with. If you're not familiar with that, it's basically where you just grab all this data from either a database or the internet, and the AI will grab out things that seem to be relevant so that a person can look through there and say, yeah, this is good, this is not. Spam filters can be artificial intelligence underneath the hood. I put in simple bitwise CRCs in here. The reason I did that was just because I have an example that kind of illustrates exactly how that's done. So we'll take a look at that a little bit later. Okay, this is my first type of AI. Quote unquote, this is your game AI. This is the, just the basic level. If any of you have studied computational theory at all, they go really heavy into this. And if you're familiar at all with regular expressions, this is kind of the exact same thing. And it's pretty interesting because you could use a string if you wanted to, you could say, okay, this is happening in my game right now, this is happening, and just start throwing out these things into a string. And you can use a regular expression if you want to parse through that string to see what exactly you want your entity in the game to do. This Let me just explain how this works for those of you who may not understand at all the computational theory. This here is considered an accepting state, or a state where we're going to act on the behavior that we've seen, or act on the information that we've seen, sorry. We start out here in this state, and every time we get a piece of the string, like if B comes in, if that's the first thing I see, I don't do anything. I'm still in that state. As soon as I get an A, I can move over to this state. Now once I'm in this state, if I get another A immediately, that's fine because I will just come down here. I can take as many B's as I want. Now why is that relevant? I mean, that's a valid question. Because, I mean, I'm trying to think off the top of my head what might be a good example. Let's say, can somebody give me a good popular game that I might know about, just off the top of your head? All right, let's say it's Half-Life, because Half-Life is, from what I understand, I'm not a big gamer, but from what I understand, Half-Life is a first-person shooter. Okay, let's say, for instance, that I'm here in this state. I see an enemy player run across the screen. Then I'm going to move to this state, right? Then, if the enemy player goes behind a wall or something like that, then that's going to move me around this B state. It's a different event that triggers a different type of response. Then once I've moved around this B state, then once I get if I get in contact with him, or the, you know, as soon as I see him again, that's going to give me another A state, right? Because I've seen him. That was the first A. He went out of view. And then I've seen him again. And then I'm going to have the AI go ahead and fire at him. Does that make sense? All right. I have some code here written in VB. Again, my apologies. It's helpful if I have an internet connection, huh? Let's see. I'm going to go hit, just try and connect. Should have realized that. Bear with me here. That's all right. Do I have to log in?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Oh, that's right. Sorry about that. Okay, we should be good. All right. I'm going to stay back here so I can get a good look at the code just for a minute. Now I've, sorry. I've actually commented out a lot of the code in here just because the state machine that I was explaining earlier is the commented out part. I just last fall came back into this code and didn't change it to another language because I was too lazy. And I I implemented what's called reinforcement learning. I actually have that. I mentioned that earlier. We'll probably get to that if I have enough time. So we'll see what happens. It's kind of complicated stuff. So we'll see. Anyway, what happens is, this is a tic-tac-toe application. And what it does is, every time the original player, the human player, makes a move, it will call into this function where it will run this AI. And you can see it's pretty simple. I mean, it's going to check for the win right here. You know, do some really simple logic. And then it's going to jump into checking for its opponent win, or, you know, the human, to see if the human's winning. And then once it's finished with that, it's going to call into this move maker thing. And that's, honestly, it's really that simple. It's just checking for different states and then making decisions based upon them. Now, I didn't do this in the exact sense of a state machine. This is really just hacked together code. But could be a lot more poetic, I think, if I did it the other way. But obviously, that's kind of, I don't know. If that's all I thought of AI, I think I'd be really disillusioned by the whole idea. Because all it is just code making decisions based upon states. And the whoever wrote the code, they're the ones making the decisions. It's not learning at all. And artificial intelligence is all about learning. Now, I'm just going to go ahead and warn you that in order to learn, you have to do some statistics. And if you combine statistics with kind of an abstract math, like discrete mathematics, then you start to get into some interesting results. These are the types of learning algorithms that I have played with. As you can see, we're going to go over kind of how to build a neural network. And if I have time after that, then we can talk about reinforcement learning. Hopefully we can get to that. That's some pretty interesting stuff. Unfortunately, I don't have any slides for that. But would anybody have any problem if I drew that up on the whiteboard? Can everybody see the whiteboard all right? Yeah? If you can't see, just let me know. All right. Here's my beautiful drawing. I'm sorry, I have no artistic ability whatsoever. As you can see, this is kind of what a neural network might look like. Right here, we have our input values. That's where all these four along here are. These lines represent the weights. A weight is basically a numerical representation of like a type of variable into the statistical algorithm that we're going to use. What really happens is the value that's put into here, for instance, let's say it's binary, we have a 1, 0, 1, 0. Simple enough. The value in here is going to get multiplied by each one of these, and it's going to go into these, we call them hidden states. They're just basically placeholders so that we can feed forward. the reason to have these hidden states is because if you go straight from the input directly to the output, sometimes it's difficult for the system to learn. And it's even possible for the system to learn exactly backwards of what you're trying to get it to do. It's not very helpful. It's really boring. And you might even think that you've done something completely wrong and you might be, you know, discouraged. As you can see, each one of these are going to have their input into the hidden states. Now, once we get to this portion, what we've done is they've all had to save all of the input from each one of these input states. They've had to save it into some kind of an array. The reason why is they're going to have to take all that information and add it all together, basically. So that's kind of where the algorithm gets a little complicated, because you know, you've got to move from here, iterating through this set of states. Now you got to start iterating through these guys, and you have to go through all of their saved information to add that all together before you can run the exact same algorithm as was run here to get these outputs. Anybody have any questions so far? What's that? Could you be a little more specific? I thought I was being pretty specific.
All right, can I interject?
Yes.
What he's talking about is one set of those nodes are input nodes.
Yes.
And it goes through, it proliferates the values through the neural network until it reaches the output nodes.
Right.
And the output nodes are actions, reactions, something like that.
That's correct.
So, an example of the artificial intelligence in the game with the opponent that's going to shoot at you.
Right.
How would those little nodes?
Well, this is actually that one that I talked about. That's more of a state machine kind of thing. This is actually trying to learn something.
So, watch where you go and know that you always hide behind this particular.
It would say that you statistically hide there more often. That make sense? Now, if I can maybe give an example.
Essentially just a parallel set of state machines?
See, I kind of thought that originally. And it's similar if you, you know, in calculus, if you take the limit as something approaches infinity, it's going to, if it's a specific kind of function, it will either converge or diverge, right? This function was written to converge at some point. If it converges quickly, then we've got these weights that never change. And if we hard code those weights into here, then we've pretty much got a state machine. But, you know, they're always going to change based on the user input. Does that make sense? If I could maybe give an example, like I said, if we used binary functions throughout these inputs, and we were trying to get, let's say, a output that had that was a cyclic redundancy check, so it was one bit or two bits. Okay, in this case, two. If we input our bits that we get into here, they're going to multiply through these weights, get to these hidden states. Then the hidden states are going to multiply by those weights, and it's going to make a guess. Now, the guess that comes out is going to be a fractional value. It's not going to come out and say 1. It's not going to come out and say 0. It'll say, like, 0.98 or whatever, and we're like, well, that's dang close to 1, so we just round it up. You know what I mean? And what I did in my neural network was I took all the values, and if it was 0.5 or above, I just went ahead and rounded it to 1. And if it was below that, anything below that, then I just rounded it down to 0. So, anyway, let's continue on with this. Here is my extremely beautiful representation of how this is done. lots of nasty math in there. Basically, you take the state value, which is x here, and you take the weight value, which was calculated by by the backpropagation algorithm that we're going to discuss. Now, in order to get this little function here, I don't know, it's kind of hard to see, but basically we have a variable n here, it's probably really hard to see, and we start with I equals 0. This is a for loop, simple. And all we do is we take our value in the array that we have and multiply it by the value for the weights. We have two arrays, right? They're the exact same size. Both are of size n. And we use our for loop to iterate through there. We add them all together. Pretty simple stuff. Then that gives us this variable that we call net. Once we've got that, in order to get the output value, which you see here, all you have to do is take the inverse, or 1 over the 1 plus this e value, which is the base of the natural log, and raise that to the power of the negative of net. That's really, it's a tough explanation to get. Does anybody have, like, an easy way to explain how that works? Because
it's like functions in math or even functions in C++.
Uh-huh.
I'm presuming that everyone at least understands what a function is. Basically, each one of those nodes, all it knows how to do is one thing.
That's right.
It takes all of its inputs.
Yes.
It does that one thing to them and then spans it to all of its outputs.
That's right. And it uses this net as kind of the intermediate variable. It's a variable as an input to the function. That's just my function right there that I'm using. And the reason it works is because I've actually drawn a graph here. This is supposed to be kind of a mathematical representation of what the graph would look like. You have your axis, your x and y axis, and it's going to converge as it goes out to infinity. So as I run this neural network training algorithm that I'm going to be showing here, as I run it over and over and over again, like seriously, probably 100,000 times or more, you know, but 100,000 is pretty good. It'll start to come out with the values that I'm actually looking for. So on that one before this, you'll start to see the 1 and 0, if that's what you're looking for. You'll start to see things like that. I have some code which might... Yeah.
Sorry.
That's fine.
I just remember something about Monte Carlo simulations.
Mm-hmm.
Is it similar to that, where you have a bunch of inputs and they kind of converge at some general...
It's a little different than that, because it's based on this underlying statistical thing. What happens is, this is only the forward propagation, right? It's called a feed forward, because all of these inputs get, you know, go into that function and come out as the output. Now, when I first start, it's obviously going to be wrong. You know, it's making these random guesses to try and come up with the output. The The difficult thing is training it. What happens is they call it a back propagation algorithm because as all of the information feeds forward, it comes up with a guess. And the guess is going to be wrong the first few times, probably the first 50,000 times even. But then what I do, and we'll cover this in just a minute, is say, no, it was supposed to be a 1. And then that sends information back to update the weights that I was talking about, the little lines. And that information starts to crunch down to the point where it gets, you know, so it's different than Monte Carlo. But
I can give an example. Imagine watching football for your first time. And at the beginning of the football game, you're told to guess which team will win. You're probably going to get it wrong.
Right.
But you're going to learn from that experience. And after you've watched 10,000 football games, you're going to have a pretty good idea of what team is going to win.
Yeah, and see, your brain is actually a lot smarter than a computer. So, you know, it's going to pick up on certain aspects a lot quicker. You'll be like, well, that guy's not a very good player, and, you know. So you're gonna pick up a lot quicker on that. And the reason why is because of what you're using to learn. In this case, all we're using to learn is a bunch of bits, 1 or 0, fed into this neural network to try and get whatever comes out. We're not learning anything really specific. You know, there's no mathematical algorithm that we're putting into here to say, okay, if you get a 1 and a 0, then you're gonna want a 1 to have a odd parity. Does that make sense? Does everybody know what parity is? If you want an odd parity, you want an odd number of ones in the system. So if you have a 1, 0, 1, there's currently an even number, so you'll say 1 there. If you have a 1, 1, 1, you'll say 0 there because you already have an odd number. Does that make sense? And that's what that's kind of what I'd like for everybody to imagine with this neural network is, we're putting in the 1, 0, 1 or whatever, and we want it to give us the value that comes out. It's a really, really simple thing for a neural network to do, but it's really, in my opinion, a good basic thing to learn from. So, is everybody good on this? Can I move on? Sorry if I'm being really confusing. There is a problem with this, though, and it's the reason that I highlighted this is because it was really important. If you just send a lot of information into a neural network, it's probably not going to learn it. It's got to have kind of a pivot point or a bias that it can look at to see what it's supposed to be doing. Kind of like an anchor in a boat, you know, it's just got to have some kind of foundation. But if you look here, it says this summation starts at 0, but we have an x state starting at 1 and going to 4. So obviously we're missing something. Like I said, this is the anchor state that I was kind of talking about. It just kind of helps the neural network to update its weights more correctly, and it's going to converge a lot better, whereas the other one might not even converge at all without that pivot state. Yes?
And I want to kill them. You know, if they feel right. Like real human beings, even though it's artificial intelligence sandbox that are doing it.
Right.
And I don't know, is anybody else on that low of a level, or is all of this making sense? Oh, just you
I might be able to help you.
Well, I mean, we've got a kismet and all of those things, but mm-hmm. that's the future that I would like to look at or hear about, is ways to eradicate.
See, I'm probably, like, more on the other side, where I'm just, like, learning how, like, trying to figure out how to build a more intelligent artificial intelligence. In fact, that's true.
There's sort of an AI war going on here. We've got these increasingly intelligent spam networks, and we've got increasingly intelligent spam filters.
Yeah.
The thing is, the
spam
bad side is getting better. The good side has to get better, or we're just going to go to war.
That's right.
I'm understanding it correctly. Is a spam bot really, quote unquote, AI? Is it really learning anything?
It very well could be. I mean, like I said, neural networks and things like that are used in data mining, and a spam bot is just data mining gone bad.
Okay, and if I can interject on whether or not spam bots really are. Okay, so the point of spam is usually to get your personal information or get you to click some app.
That's right.
Have you heard of the Russian dating bot? There's a bot in Russia right now that will perfectly emulate a lonely woman. And it will talk to guys. And it is so human-like that it will convince them that it's human to the point where they will give out their personal information. They are...
he probably wrote it.
Like that Chatty to God program that, you know...
That's right.
What's the address for this thing?
Last I heard, they were only in Russia.
Oh,
they're going to be spreading out.
So you can't talk to it if you're in the United States?
Well, I don't speak Russian, but it's a minor problem for me.
Oh, yeah. That could be a problem. Anyway, I think maybe, you know, if you kind of understood how an artificial intelligence works, maybe you could figure out how to not give it its, you know, how to not train it. Problem is, bots like that are usually similar types of artificial intelligence, and they're not looking for you to train them. They've already been trained. They just are, they're just out looking for information, and they're collecting it all and shoving it into a database. So, is this not interesting at all?
And programming. So we're really in AI. What I think is really interesting is the application thing. So this is the kind of stuff I want to accomplish. I'm interested in suggesting things to people in my life. I'm a CTO for a podcasting company. So we have people who are interested in certain types of podcasts. What kind of tools can I use to recommend them things that they might be interested in?
How does that relate to AI though?
Machine learning. So I track their behavior.
Uh-huh.
See what
Yeah, and this is kind of like just a how-to, less than a how-to implement, this is how to write the library, not really how to use it. You know what I mean? So, I actually do have a pretty good, let's see here. This is all really nasty math. So, for those of you who care, you can go to my website and grab this off if you're more interested in it. I'm just going to go ahead and skip to something that might be a little more interesting. Okay. This was an idea I had about 6 months ago, I'd say. I was at work. I work at a home automation company, like I said, and they have a microcontroller that runs Linux. And the you can get into the microcontroller. They have a guest account. It's useful for the dealers, the people that sell our product, to be able to get into there and compile scripts and things like that. Sometimes the feedback from the embedded system is just not what you're looking for. And so sometimes you honestly need to get in there and compile a script. Well, I jumped on there. The operating system guy was refusing to give out passwords. And the guest account didn't have a password. So, fine, you can get in, right? But the guest account really can't do much. So I wanted the root password. And I was trying to get it from him. He wouldn't give it to me. And I found out the whole thing was encrypted with DES. I don't know if any of you have heard of that. It was an older version of DES. It was like the eight character passwords. You know what I'm talking about? It just truncates it or, you know, fills it in with blanks. Well, I was like, you know, that neural network that I was showing you, I was like, easy. I just break it up into a bunch of different states like that. I take the hash that comes out of DES, you've seen the little thing with a bunch of different ugly characters coming out of there. Yeah? Have you ever looked at your past WD file at all? Well, it's not in there anymore, but on this embedded system, it actually is, because it's kind of an older version of Linux. But if you look in the past WD or the shadow file in your Linux box, you'll see that there's a little hash. It looks like a bunch of garbage. It's like capital letters, lowercase letters, numbers, all the way through that whole thing. And that's what they call the hash. That's what gets created by when you type in your password. It goes into the program and out pops the hash. So my idea was to grab the hash out of there, which the guest account had access to for some reason. I think that might have been oversight on his part. Anyway, so I built that neural network that I was showing you, and I took the hash, and I actually had one neural network for each bit in the ASCII, in the whole entire ASCII thing. So, you know, if you do the math, it's actually quite a bit, because there's like 8 bits in a byte, right? One byte can represent one ASCII character, and there's 8 ASCII characters possible. So it's like 64 different neural networks running all at the same time. And then I take my hash that I took out of the past WD file, and I take that and I shove it in to this neural network, or the set of neural networks. And I took that, did that over and over and over. Basically, what I do is I had a driver program that was running, and it would grab a word out of a library. So I had this huge library with like hundreds of thousands of words in it. And it would take a word out of the library, and it would encrypt it with DES. And then DES would return the hash. I would take the hash, feed it into my neural network, and it would propagate through, and then once it had gotten through there, then it would make a guess. And obviously, you know, it's going to be wrong at first, but what I did was I just took that original word that I used to encrypt, and I said, no, the word is this. And so it would take that, run it through that back propagation algorithm that we kind of skipped over, and it would update all the weights. Eventually, it got to the point where it could guess accurately what the password should be based on the hash. And I ended up getting that. I passed his hash into there and came up with the password, and that was the correct password. It took about 14 days to train the thing on an old 900 megahertz processor.
So what was the password?
It was actually, it was pretty funny because I had used, have you ever heard of John the Ripper? The ripping, yeah. I used that, didn't come up with anything. I ran that thing for weeks, and it didn't work at all. So it ended up being 46 with a space, and then the word vomit. So it was pretty interesting. Anyway, so I went and told the guy. I was like, "Hey, man, I found out what your password is." He's like, "How'd you do that?" And I explained the whole thing to him. He's like, "That's kind of cool." He's like, "But then he said, I didn't realize that the guests could see the hash." And I was like, "Well, so sorry." So anyway, that's kind of like one way that I've used it. But you can see from that story that it's really important to define what you want. What I did was I decided to break the whole thing down into ASCII, right? So that way, ASCII is easy because all it is just one bit per character or one byte per character, and the bits are easy to break up. So that's why it's really important to define your features really well. A feature is actually defined as the unit of measurement, kind of like in physics. You know, you've got force, and here we do it like in pounds. You know, so in artificial intelligence, those are called features. I don't know who came up with that, actually. We talked about building that training program that, you know, I used. I took the words out of the library and I fed them back in. I'm actually currently working on a project that is kind of on the same lines as what you were talking about. What it does is it goes in, and have you seen those? I don't know what they're called, but they're little pictures. Yeah. So you can look at the picture and determine what it's supposed to be, and then you.
Stop doing that.
But see, I don't ever use those things.
Well, that's already been done, man.
Yeah, but not by me. That's why it's an interesting problem. You know what I'm talking about? Anyway. But see, I don't use them for anything. I just like to see if I can do it. So. It's kind of bad. Yeah. In fact, we're my professor and I, the guy that I've been doing research with, we're actually thinking about that. The difficult thing is how do you run the back propagation, which takes a lot of computing power, while you're running the game, which takes a lot of computing. You know, most
that's
games.
What PlayStation 3 is for.
Yeah.
We
were thinking you could have like a server side, and then you could have like a client side, right? And the server side is separate from the game server. It's a AI server. And what happens is every time something happens in the game, it takes all that information, shoves it into the AI. That thing runs the really nasty calculation, which takes memory and, you know, processing, like lots of iterations on the processor to do. But we think that that's possible, and we're actually working on a project to do that. So
can you use parallel processing for the video card?
You can. Did you say through the video cards?
Yeah.
So you're talking about using the GPU to compute the thing? Yeah, we've actually looked into that a little bit. It's kind of cool because you kind of have to break it down into a graphic. I mean, that's what you submit to the GPU is a graphic. And that thing can crunch numbers like nobody's business. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's kind of a
there's also the cell process
way that they're going. Yeah,
that would be very well suited.
We've looked at that too. That thing's really awesome. It has a Apple PowerPC processor that is the main processor. And then it's got a bunch of IBM processors running underneath it. It's got 8 cores, I believe.
Yeah.
Thing's awesome. So.
Unless real-time scales, this is already applied.
Uh-huh.
Because in non-neural network AI, all of this backtracing is usually done a little in adjustments on constants and a function in the heuristic.
Yep.
So what they do a lot on games and stuff like that is they adjust the heuristics of your AI ahead of time
right.
so that the AIs get smarter and smarter. And then.
But that only adds momentum to the process, right? It speeds it up. You still got a lot of crunching to do, though.
All right, say again?
It only adds momentum to the neural network process. It causes it to converge faster.
The heuristic?
Yes.
Well, I was talking about using heuristics in non-neural network situations.
Okay, yeah. With, like, reinforcement learning or something like that?
More like path searching, which is much more common in the game.
Yeah. True. Chess AI oftentimes we use tree searches, like decision trees. Mm-hmm. That's what you're talking about?
And that relies literally entirely on
heuristics. On heuristics, right. Which takes a lot less computation, but still a lot.
Well, considering you've got a 64 by 64 board with different kinds of moves,
right.
On chess, your heuristic is atrocious.
Right.
That's why Big Blue or Deep Blue,
mm-hmm.
the one that actually won the chess tournament,
uh-huh.
had to build their heuristic into the hardware to make it go fast.
Right. Exactly. And see, that's the kind of problem. We're trying to make it so you can use a regular machine, a regular PC. That's what we're working on right now to build. Anyway, yeah? Uh-huh. And it does the computation for you. Thanks for that, because I actually, I'm all about, like, I'm trying to take the knowledge that I know and come up with something a little more nucleus or whatever. Right. Right. Mm-hmm. Thanks, I appreciate that.
What was that website again?
The program is called Weka.
Weka?
Yeah.
Cool, so there you go. Now you have a library. Just API, plug it all in. That is way awesome. Because I was, I was going from the ground up and saying, okay, this is kind of where I think things are going to go. I didn't really get into that, but... yes.
Once you're past the training phase of the neural network,
mm-hmm.
does it learn anymore after that, or...?
You can keep training it if you want.
Well, how do you do that if you're working with real data without...
You run the backpropagation algorithm that I was talking about. Kind of skipped over that page. It's on there. It's on ai.trickster.com if you want to look at it, but you don't have to run that.
You run the backpropagation, though. You have to know the answer, right?
Right.
Okay, so if I'm running this neural network on this gob of data,
mm-hmm.
and it comes up with something, I've got no way to backtrain it and say, oh, that was wrong or what,
right.
without going through the
So
whole.
You've got to be pretty, you've got to narrow your domain of the things that you're looking at and be pretty sure what you're going to get in there so that you can train it appropriately. Because you don't want it grabbing something that's clear off out in Timbuktu. So... That's right.
Yeah.
But you don't always have to train it. Does that make sense? You don't have to run the back propagation. You can take whatever it gives you as an answer and trust it. So.
Right. I got a bridge for sale.
Yeah, that's right.
Just sort of like with bad.
But if your domain is well defined, if the range of stuff that you're looking at. It's pretty well defined, and you know kind of what you're going to be getting out of there, then you're going to be pretty accurate when you get it back. So. The network, you want as many inputs as you have for data. That makes sense, right? You want about 2 times what I usually do for an algorithm is multiply the number of inputs by 2 and subtract half. Does that make sense?
Right,
2 times n being the number of inputs, minus 1/2 of the number of inputs. Does that make sense? So you're going to get, like, if you had 2, you know, 2 times that's 4, and minus half, you're going to be back to 2.
Why would you do that? Why not multiply by 1?
Well, you could, but it's going to be different for different numbers. Does that make sense? Actually, you'd be... Yeah, sorry. I think I didn't do that right. Yeah, multiply by 1.5. It works. Anyway, the reason I do that is because you want, generally, you know, 2 is a very small neural network. But generally, you want, like, a little bit more, like, hidden nodes, hidden states, than you have input states.
So 1.5
times infinity hidden states. So you multiply n by 2, and then subtract it by n times 0.5. Does that make sense? 2n minus 0.5n.
Which gives you 1.5n.
Right. Or do that.
Okay. So you have 1.5 times as many hidden states if you do input states.
Right. So you have more. I don't know.
And how deep do you make it?
I'll tell you what, man. My calculus class, nobody understood me, so don't feel bad. Anyway, I think I'm out of time, so I appreciate you guys bearing with me and coming, listening. Thanks.
Thank you for coming to the 2001st conference. The survey of phone shirts. Please fill them out to let us know how we're doing. Again, if you talk to GuruLab, the sponsor in this room, please check out their website at GuruLab.com. Thank you again.
Thank you for listening to Hack Republic Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.